Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host today, and I am delighted to introduce our leading lady today. Our topic, first of all, is CEO Tsunami, Executive Presence Changing the World with Data. And you're going to find out exactly what all that means, as I am delighted to introduce our leading lady today, who is Jay Connolly LaBelle, and she is the president and chief executive officer of an incredible organization called RippleNami. And Jay, we're going to find out more about you, but please start out by saying hello to all of our listeners. Hello, Jay. Say hello to all of our listeners.
Hi, Michelle, and welcome, and thank you for inviting us on to talk about RippleNami today.
I was going, what happened? We went silent. We went crickets. It's like, welcome, welcome. Were you thinking about that, or what was going on? You were scaring
me. I was
me.
Talking. I wasn't hearing. No problem.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, good. So we know we're dialed in. It's all good. But, you know, I want to say, out of full disclosure, you are an incredible woman, and I'm just going to feed your soul a bit here, because you are what I call all that as a leader in business. And RippleNami is doing some incredible things, and I know it has to do with, quote, maps. Can you kind of give our listeners a little bit of an overview in very much layman's terms of what RippleNami is? Would you mind?
Absolutely not. So RippleNami is a business-to-business technology company, and we're working in developing nations solving very critical problems. For example, women and children in Africa spend 6 hours a day looking for water, yet they have cell phones, and what we've done is supply them with an application, think of it as like a Google Maps, to where they can pull up any information regarding water wells or healthcare or resources or education, all within a map, and then be able to get more information about what's going on. Is this water well working or not, or do I need to walk to the next one? And to avoid these 6 hours that they're spending a day, and that's just one example. So it's big data that's out there. We have it in Excel spreadsheets and binders, and all we've done is put it on a map so people can visualize it, so it makes sense of what's around their world, so they can map what's important in their world.
I love this, but, you know, back up on something, because, you know, I think for technology and hearing this term all the time, Jay, that's big data, you know, I mean, what, can you just kind of, again, layman's terms, because I know for a lot of our listeners, they're not, you know, in technology, you know, they might work with it, but what is big data? I mean, help me understand for our listeners of what is defined as big data.
Okay, I'm going to put it in a U.S. mentality. So we talk about veterans, and there are a lot of veterans here in the United States, and there are 47,000 charities helping out vets. That's a lot of different organizations helping out vets, along with the VA. There's a lot of resources, but if you're a vet suffering from PTSD, and you sit down and Google PTSD clinics, and a lot of stuff will pop up, and you have to go sort through all that. But what if you could put all that data from the 47,000 charities and the Veterans Association into one application, so the vet, within, think of a Google Maps, could just put in PTSD, and all the clinics that are relevant will pop up, rather than having to sort through all this information on the internet. So big data is any type of data, whether it's whether it's traffic, to terrorism attacks, to put a picture on a map, is there a fire, it could be emergency. All this is data, and it's constantly, we're being hit with it all the time, whether it's social media, whether it's on the TV, whatever it is, there's just a bunch of data out there. And we take that data, whatever formats it in, and we're able to put it on a map for the simple person to be able to look at it and make sense out of it. Because there's really, really expensive geospatial systems out there. But think about it, on a map, and you can map your world. What's important in your world? Because what's important in my world isn't important in your world. And if you go over to the ocean in Africa, they have a different level of importance. So the data, we have data everywhere. Resources, assets, you name it. That's all data.
All just ready to be manipulated and sorted and organized. And I'm going old school with you for a moment, because what I'm envisioning, just when you're talking about it, I'm going, oh, so like in my banking days, when I walked into a client's office who was a manufacturer and they had all those little push pins on the map that was like an actual paper map on a wall, and they had all their little push pins of where their distribution centers are. I mean, something like that, but now it's visual. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I think I'm finally getting
it. So that is, think about it. So Google Maps, you can, like, pull up one layer of a data at a time, meaning that if I want to know all hotels, I can put in hotels around me, and all the hotels will pop up. What we do is we take, that's great, that's one layer of data, hotels. Mm-hmm. But what if you want to know, okay, where are the hotels? What's the weather like? Where are the main attractions? Are there any road outages? I want to know more about that area that I'm walking into or going into, that's data.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have an ability to layer that data and allow anybody with no education level, and that's very important because this is very complicated stuff, but we've made it so easy that anyone can do this. Because the population we're dealing with are living in extreme poverty.
But that's not the sole focus of RippleNAMI, is it? Is it poverty?
Yeah.
You know, impoverished areas. That's your whole focus.
It is.
I mean, give us the
developing nations.
Back up,
developing.
Because I want to go back up on something. Because you know, how did the whole technology come about? I mean, what's the story behind RippleNAMI from the very beginning? Where was the tipping point? Where was the idea? And then, if you don't mind, kind of sharing the history here of the why, right? I want our listeners to know why RippleNAMI came about.
Right. So we think that people, we can foster change if we can collaborate and coordinate with data. So that's the why. So, and it started with Phil Gunn, our founder, a couple years ago, and he was running missions in Africa for the UN, delivering water, specifically via plane, landing the water in the middle of wherever Africa. He landed 30 tons of water. And there was no one there. He called the UN. He said, these are the coordinates you gave us. And they're like, yeah, we don't know where people are. He's like, why can't we connect to the unconnected?
Jay, please call back. We're talking about this tsunami. I think we had a tsunami on our Women Lead Radio show today. Hey, Jay, I think you're back. We lost you.
I'm back. Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know where I left off.
Well, you were talking about how they couldn't find anybody when your founder flew into Africa and said, we've got water, but we can't find anybody.
Right.
I think that's where we lost you.
Right. So he's like, why can't we connect to these people? Why don't they all have cell phones? So in what's happened in the developing nations is people have leapfrogged us over landlines, computers, laptops, you name it. They don't have that. They do everything on their cell phone. So we have technology. They have technology. Why can't we connect the two? So that's what we built that application, is to connect the unconnected. We focus in developing nations and underconnected people that just need a break. There's 5 billion people in this population. This is the majority of the population that are living, 3 billion live in extreme poverty, whether they're refugees or extreme poverty. So it's big numbers, and that is our focus. And so we started in Africa, we're in Latin America and in Europe, and we're getting ready to go to Southeast Asia.
Well, and I know you have a long history with technology companies of being brought in to build the company, get it, you know, profitable, and then kind of mergers and acquisitions. I mean, tell our listeners a little bit about how did you get involved in Ripple NAMI? Because you were doing other things, right? What brought you in to the company? And I've got 20,000 other questions for you. But how did you get brought into this incredible concept?
Actually, Bank of America introduced me to Ripple NAMI. I had just sold another company. My background has been 30 years of leadership in finance and mergers and acquisitions, public companies, doing big deals to the tune of acquiring over $2 billion worth of acquisitions. And then I went on the sell side after, rolling up all these different industries, and I went on the tech side and had two companies that I was brought in as a C-level person, ended up being CEO, and ended up running the company in successful exits. So I'd retired a little bit, as we all do. After a deal, you need a break. Bank of America is like, hey, we got this guy you need to meet. So I met with Phil, and he's like, I have this vision. I just need help getting there. And I'm like, yeah, you do need help. He had a great vision.
Oh, I love it.
I have a great team that's been with me for a couple companies. And we sat down, we looked at the market, we looked at the analysis. We're like, is there a need here? We love disruptive technology. And said, yeah, this is something we can get behind, and started 2 years ago. And first customer signed up within 8 months. And we have some very high-profile customers, some we can talk about, some we can't talk about, that are out there to make a difference in the world. And that's what we're all about. We're all about a disruptive technology that is simple for the user to use. It's very complicated in the back end, but no one needs to know about the back end. But it's very simple, meaningful, and can make a difference in the world.
Well, I love that, and I'm all over like a bunny here as far as questions and things. But, for you getting involved, it's like this – I want to make sure I'm kind of clear and whatever you can add as far as information, Jay. It's like this is a for-profit business venture, but it's doing good, correct? Through the initiatives and the when people use the platform. So help our listeners understand, how does Ripple NAMI make money then when you're doing good? I just want to make sure they kind of understand the scenario of the business model.
Yeah, so we have a SaaS-based model, a software-as-a-service model, and we're a B2B. So we actually contract directly with an organization, such as AeroPioneer. AeroPioneer is an air logistics company in Kenya, and they deliver aid. And so their customers are UN, World Bank, African Union, you name it, any NGO out there. And they deliver aid into war-torn areas constantly, water, food, picking up people, delivering people. Their issue was, there's not runways in Kenya and throughout Eastern Africa like we know runways, right? There may be a dirt road, a bunch of animals on it, mm-hmm. or it may be flooded out. So their big issue was like, how does the pilot who's landing be able to communicate to the next pilot behind them? So now they can take a picture, they can put it on a map so the pilots can all see the runways real time. And now they can see the coordinates of where they need to go. They can see everything around them. They can see if there's we're tracking real-time terrorism attacks, road outages, situational awareness, whether it's a man-made or natural-made issue. That's all live data. So when they land, they can see what they're getting ready to land into, or they can choose not to land. They can then document what they did and see on a map so the person behind them now has a roadmap. So they, AeroPioneer, our customer, pays us based upon the number of users that use the system. It's a SaaS-based model, and it's a per-user subscription fee on an annual basis. That's how we make money.
Very cool. And I'm curious with you because, telling our listeners, I've interviewed you before at our Women Owners Summit, and I swear I only got like one layer of you at that event. And, hearing about your background where it's like you're brought into this company and it's, you raise funds and you build it, and then it's like I'm assuming you're involved in when the company gets sold or merged. What is it that excites you so much about coming in and out of these companies like that? I mean, I'm kind of curious. You're kind of like got a new project coming on. Is that the part that excites you, or is it building something up to sell? What is it that makes you so successful in your opinion from coming in and out and gets you all excited about these companies that you're not with forever? I mean, that's hard for some people.
Yeah, there's different, everybody has a lane that they can play in, right? Mine is not mm-hmm. the startup from the very beginning. Mine is not the couple billion dollar company that you want to run and be comfortable in for the rest of your life, making, you know, organic growth. That's not me. I like disruption, you know, just a real mess to where you can fix it. And then it actually turns into success. And it's all about shareholder value for me, is building a company that has a disruptive technology that adds shareholder value, that makes a difference in the world. So if it can meet those three criteria for me, that is exciting opportunity for me.
And do you actually have that? I mean, is that kind of, that's the criteria you measure the next big, big opportunity for you on?
Yes.
Is it's got to meet that three. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
So shareholder value. What was the other
shareholder
one?
Shareholder value.
That it needs to be
disruptive technology. Well,
okay.
Well, it's just got to be a disruptive technology. And then that it's going to make a difference in the world. So that it's not, you know, some fly-by-night, oh, it's a great, cool app right now, but in a year from now, people are like, what was it? The very first startup I was associated with in 1991 is still around today. I was a third person hired.
Holy cow.
So that's the kind of cool stuff. It's like, you know, the last two companies, or the core of the companies that acquired them, their technology. That's what I like to do, because that, to me, that's a legacy that it's a business legacy I can leave behind. Like there, it was a diamond in the rough, and just had a couple leaders that just didn't have the right, you know, didn't put the team together that made it move in the right direction. So it's about putting a team together. Yeah, it's not fun. You're not, you know, you're not the most liked person most of the time, but at the end of the day, it's business, and it's about shareholder return and making a difference in the world. And there's no ego. You can't.
Right.
This isn't about a personal feelings, all this stuff. It's business, and it's getting down to business.
Well, and that, you know, and that leads me to something too, because, you know, what's funny is when you start talking about kind of your philosophy and what RippleNami is, I can hear the passion in your voice. And, you know, something that I guess, you know, you said it's business, it's not personal, but you have to be passionate about what you do. How do you keep the passion there along with making sure that it's still, you know, it's business and you don't make it personal? Or is there a way to do that? Because I, you know, again, I just, and again, not trying to go to the woman thing, but for you, as a leader, how do you keep that passion there when you've got to make such objective decisions, you know, from a business standpoint? Is there a way to balance that for you?
Yeah, I do. I think it really has to come down to the mission of your company and the why. Why are we doing this? And the people we hire, you got to get behind this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some great talent out there, but if they don't have the passion, they can't get behind it. It's just a yet another job. They're not going to be the right candidate for us. So it's really a team. It's building the team, and the excitement that you see through others' eyes really just excites you. Our partners are super excited. I mean, we just have great people that we work with, and there are some not good people out there that we all know, and you don't want to work with them, and they're negative, and they're downers, and they're just conflict or roadblocks, and yeah, but those aren't our guys. So we make a lot of changes when it comes to that. We make sure we're working with the right partners, the right customers, and the right employees, and it just creates this energy. There's just a positive energy.
You mentioned earlier, you said, you know, I bring my team with me. So, you know, and I went through 5 mergers and acquisitions in commercial banking, and I never had the same team, right? Because everybody kind of went to the three wins or they moved around. But for you, how do you do that? Because I would assume, even though it's still, you said, technology, is your team just that adaptive? Or I'm kind of curious, how did you bring your team over and over and over to different company opportunities? What is the secret sauce to that? Because I'm really curious to know about that.
Well, you work with a lot of people and you find a lot of good ones, and you're like, please stay with me.
Begging.
Know
is
each
that what
other.
You're saying? You beg them?
It's a lot of begging. Yeah, because sometimes you're not getting paid for a while, right? In a startup, you're like,
okay.
You know, here's some paper. Here's some stock options. It's more about, it's just personalities, and we each know we've got each other's backs, and we know our strengths and weaknesses. So we know that, you know, everyone knows, like, what are my weaknesses? So that's my strength. And we just can leverage each other's strengths and weaknesses. And so we just have a very good core team. And we do add new members in all the time. And it's not like an exclusive club. So some people are like, yeah, I'm going to tap out. I'm going to stay here. You know, we do have that, and that's cool. But for the most part, I mean, CFO and I, we've been working together for 20 years.
Holy
in different
cow.
Companies.
Wow.
And it's just, it's this person you can call and say, okay, I got something. I think you'd be a great fit for this. And sometimes it's not a good fit.
What do you, this is interesting because, you know, I'm building a team for our association, and I know a lot of, professional women out in our listening audience, they are managing people. What would be, you know, I know I've heard you should take personality tests, you know, to kind of see, you know, if everybody kind of fits from, you know, the personality and behavior standpoint. What are some things you do to kind of make sure you have the right team? I mean, do you do anything that you can share as far as your secret sauce? Is it personality assessments, or you just get a, you know, kind of like spidey sense about who people are? I hope
yeah.
you have some suggestions maybe.
Yeah,
what
very high tech. Yeah, we have a very high-tech test. Would you want to sit down and at a barbecue and have a beer with that person? Is this a person you can picture yourself hanging out with? That's our test. It's a personality. It's a passion. It's really about, we are working 24/7, 365 days a year because we're Africa, we're everywhere, right? We're working a lot together. We're traveling a lot together. Like, you got to be able to like this person. Can you stand them for a barbecue and a beer? If you can't, that's five test number one. Not going to be a fit. And then it comes down to philosophies in life. You know, if you really, there's people out there that really, really want to make a difference in the world. And it's not easy. This is not an easy path. And the excitement that they get, it's just like this excitement. Like you just have to come and see a meeting because it's just like we just leverage off each other because it's not easy.
Yeah, you guys are having a barbecue and you're having a beer. I got that. You're having a barbecue and you're having a beer. Those are your meetings.
You can do those two things. We work hard and we make sure that we actually like each other.
That's pretty cool. I got to tell you, in 7 years we've been doing this show, that's pretty good. If you can have a barbecue and a beer with them. But I want to go back to serious business. So, you know, for Ripple NAMI, I know you said you could only share certain things and not others. So I want to be respectful of that. But can you share a project that you've worked on that was successful, or is everything top secret? I mean, is there any kind of like, you know, example of an initiative you were working on and tell us a little bit about one.
Absolutely. So our very first customer was a company called Nuru International. And Nuru is N-U-R-U. It means hope in Swahili. And they are a bunch of Marines that went to Stanford for their MBA and came up with this idea. And it's a for-profit, non-for-profit, sustainable farming. And they're all about ending extreme poverty because they believe it ends to terrorism, which it does. So they are in Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Congo, and they're out there teaching sustainable farmers. So farmers have an income, and whatever income they have, they can use for their family, and any profit that the company makes then goes into a non-for-profit. So it's a great organization.
Wow.
They have a couple hundred thousand farmers. And so what the project was, or what the use case is there's 25 employees in this company. And they have offices in Ethiopia and Kenya. So 25 employees, 100,000 farmers, you can do the math. Hard to get to everybody, right? What if you could just communicate on your phone? What if, you know, crops are dying? Farmer can take a picture of the crops, can pin it on a map. The team leader, a Nuru, can pull it up and say, oh, real time. Oh, whoa, it looks like you need fertilizer or you got a bug. Okay, now I can look and see where all my suppliers are on my map. And deploy them, and I can tell them where to go because I know if there's a bombing or a road outage or floods. So I can do all my logistics there online, all within the same application, our application. So it's a way to real-time communicate, real-time situation, to where, like, I've got a problem. I'm not going to wait for you to come out here every 30 days because that's what they make around every 30 days. I don't have time. Everything will be dead by the time you get out here. So it's a way to accelerate the resources and the need, connect those two. So that's a real live situation going on.
Pretty cool. I mean, and for you, it's like, how do you guys pick your projects? I mean, do they come to you? Do you guys have kind of this secret sauce way that you go find, you know, the kind of next big thing for Ripple NAMI? Or can you share about kind of your strategy? Because I would imagine you have to be very selective in what you take on and who you are working with. Am I right?
No, we don't have to be selective. What we have, we actually have a channel partner strategy. Mm-hmm. So through our partners is how we meet those organizations in the greatest need. And we're working with countries. I mean, like country leaders, presidents, prime ministers, et cetera, on whether it's mapping all the ministries of a government. Just one country we're working with is mapping all the ministries, all the assets that they have, so that they can actually look at what they actually currently have. What is the baseline? What do we have? Where are our roads? Mm-hmm. Where are our hospitals? Where are our healthcare? They don't know that. We take that for granted. They don't know that. Where's our schools?
Wow.
One of our projects was mapping all the schools in Kenya. No idea until we put it down on a map. They're like, oh my gosh, look at our schools. Now we can overlay population density. We can see infrastructure, sanitation. We can start to make sense out of it. That's all big data. So we work through channel partners. Our channel partners lead us into customers. And from there, we have a team in Africa. We do have a sales team in East Africa. We have one in mm-hmm. the U.S. and we have one in Europe. So we put out our business development folks out first. They get the partners on board, probably have, I don't know, 10 to 13 partners per location. Those partners then are an extension of our sales team. We work the deals with them, close the deals, ops, engineering, and finance, all the back offices here in San Diego.
And this is only 2 years ago when RippleNami started, correct?
Correct. Not even, yep.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I mean, if you could share with our listeners, because, you know, there's so many of our listeners that are wanting to be better leaders, right, as women. Just incredible, your background and all the things you're doing, first of all. So I'm humbly saying you're awesome and you're wonderful. But to our listeners, what would be maybe the top three things that you feel have been most central to your success as a leader in business?
I guess two successful traits or something. I think it's just being very honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I have actually two, honest and tenacity. And I recently had dinner with Joanne King Herring, who was Julia Roberts played her in Charles Wilson's War. She's a real person.
Oh,
88
right,
years old.
Right.
She was behind Charles Wilson's War. And I asked her, she's 88. We sat down to dinner and I said, Joanne, you've been, you know, very successful woman. You know, what is it, the one thing you could tell me and my daughter, we were having dinner with her, that we could take on and, you know, carry on in life? And she's like, tenacity. It's all about tenacity. Mm-hmm. If you are persistent and you have tenacity, you can get through anything. You can get through absolutely any obstacle out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's about being direct, honest, have that passion and tenacity. Those are really the success traits I see of any person, woman or man. You have those kind of traits, you can accomplish anything you want.
Pretty cool. How did your daughter react to that? What did she have any, like, oh, or was it, did it kind of go, was there a good reaction when she was told that? You said your daughter was with you.
My daughter was with me, so she's awesome. I was a single mom, and I raised a very strong daughter who's an attorney.
Right.
And she was, yeah, she lives and breathes everything that we actually talked about. That's how she acts.
That was pretty cool.
She was great.
Oh, well,
it was a great dinner. Yeah.
I can only imagine. That lady's a pretty powerhouse, as I recall from the movie. So that's my recollection of that. But, you know, when for RippleNami for the future, kind of like lay out for me the grand vision of the future. Is it to build? I know it's to change the world. I can't believe I finally kind of have my arms around just a touch, you know, of what RippleNami is all about. But what is the end goal with RippleNami? I know you guys have grandiose goals. Share the future with our listeners of what you're trying to have as the end result with RippleNami.
Yeah, I mean, so always the end goal is to maximize shareholder value. And what does that mean? It can mean many different things. It could mean grow the company to a level of revenue to where it's an attractive acquisition target, continue to grow the company and see where it goes. So it's really going to be driven off of shareholder value and how we continue to make a difference in the world. There may be a point in time we get to, we say, you know what, and this is always the inflection point every company needs to think about, is can we grow on our own? How much capital is it going to cost to continue this? And will there be competition, mm-hmm. and can we still be the market leader out there? And at sometimes you say, no, you know what, it's time to sell, because the only way the company is going to be successful is with some other larger organization. And so that's an inflection point you look at. We probably have a two-year window right now that we're looking at. It takes about 3 to 5 years by the time you start up a company to figure out where your path is going to go, what's the best best approach for the shareholders. So we got 2 years. We're going to grow the heck out of this company. You're going to see some pretty exciting press releases here in the next couple weeks of deals we've just done. We had to wait for a couple elections, country's elections to happen. So we're really excited about the next year. We will exceed our five-year plan in year two.
Wow.
Pretty excited about that.
Well, you know, I've been to the RippleNAMI website. You guys have all kinds of awards, and this is just on year two. So congratulations on all your recognition and the great things you're doing. If any of our listeners want to reach out or contact you/RippleNAMI, how would you recommend they, kind of get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can either go to the website, RippleNAMI.com, reach out to me, J-A-Y-E, at RippleNAMI.com, and happy to answer any questions. Our PR folks are on the website, too. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Twitter. We're social media out there.
Pretty easy to get a hold of. That's awesome. Well, I can't say thanks enough, to you for being yet again, one of our leading ladies today, because you are, as I like to say, all that, and you're incredible. And just thank you again for being, on our show today. And to all of our listeners, we're here every Monday at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. I am happy to say that our next leading lady and our topic is Real Strategies for Disruptive Innovation. JJ, there's that word disruption again. I like that word too. But Real Strategies for Disruptive Innovation, and Joni Connell, who is our host of Real Life Lessons, is going to interview Marcia Dasko, who is an executive team advisor on leadership strategy and disruptive innovation. So it sounds like that will be a good show as well. It's Friday. I hope all of you are excited about the weekend. And as always, thank you for being our loyal listeners. And we will catch you again on Women Lead Radio.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.